morning. Anybody ever watch this television show? Yeah? Okay. What would you do? How many of you like this show? Okay. Now, notice that there were a lot fewer enthusiastic responses to like it. Well, if you've never seen this show, let me describe it for you. It's actually been on for a really long time, like 10 years or so or more. It's on ABC, and it's a hidden camera show. And basically, they put these actors in situations to portray real-life situations just to see what will happen, to see if the people around them will step up, step in, say something, you know, interject themselves into somebody else's situation. And some of the episodes I was looking on Wikipedia, you know, the great place to get all information, there's a list of like every episode that they've done. And so I was looking through there, and some of these episodes are pretty benign. I mean, they're pretty easy. There's an episode where a teenager is in a restaurant with his parents, and he's on his phone, and the parents are trying to talk to him, and he won't respond, and finally he yells at the parent, you know, and all of us think, that's just life. That's my family, right? I mean, that's just what it is. So who's going to interject themselves in that? We feel your pain. We're all there, you know. But others are a little bit more emotional and engaging. Like there was an episode where there was a white waitress who was serving two African-American teenagers, and she told the teenagers that they would have to prepay for their meal before she would be willing to serve them. Now, that one right there is a little bit more emotion evoking, right? I mean, if you're sitting there, what would you do if you see no one else having to prepay, but she's saying they did? What would you do? Then there was another one where there was a grocery bagger at a grocery store, obviously, and with noticeable Down syndrome, and one of the actor customers chooses to insult the bagger, calling them names, yelling at him, and even uses a very derogatory name for that individual. And of course, the question for that is, what would you do if you were standing in behind that person in the line? If you were sitting at the table next to the African-American teenagers, what would you do? Now, I have to admit, many of you had the same response to this show that I do. I don't like it. I don't like it at all because it makes me feel very bad. It makes me feel very guilty because personally, I've shared before, even though I stand up here in public speak often, I'm more of an introvert. I'm more of a keep to yourself kind of guy. Anybody out there like me? Like, yep, up. I see those hands in the sound booth back there. That's why they're in the sound booth, right? Because it's the box of protection. Nobody comes in the box of protection. They leave us alone. No. We're that way. I we see something happen, and yeah, we look and we're like, oh, that's wrong. They shouldn't do that. And we turn around and walk the other way, right? I mean, I don't like this show for that very reason, because it makes me feel a bit guilty knowing that in most of these or all of these situations, I'm the guy that just kind of sits on the sideline and let it happen. But how about you? How about you? If you were in those situations, if you saw something inappropriate happening around you, would you put your head down and walk right on by? Or would you be the kind of person that was willing to step in, to engage, to maybe even confront that bad behavior? What would you do? Well, this is the question we're going to address today. We're in the middle of this series that we're calling Imagine, From What Is to What Could Be. And every week what we're doing is we're turning our attention back to the Old Testament, specifically the prophets of the Old Testament. And we're looking at the messages and the words of warning sometimes and the truth that they were speaking to the people to see if we take those messages and we bring them forward. Is there a message for us today? And how would our lives and in our neighborhoods and our communities, how would they be different if we took these words from thousands of years ago and began to live them out today? And so far, we've seen things like calls for justice and mercy, to seek the peace and the prosperity of the city, and to not get discouraged or give up just because things may start out small or we may experience challenges. But today, we turn our attention to that question that we just asked. What would you do? What would you do? Instead of just turning or walking by and ignoring things around us, what would happen if we took that opportunity to step up? And not just to step up, but to step in, to certain things. Now, I don't mean in an obnoxious, jerky, let's post on Facebook and ignite a fire kind of way, but I'm talking about what if we stepped into situations in a very Jesus-y, very loving, very truth-centered kind of way. What would things be like? How would life be different if we started actually standing in the gap for others? So as we look to the Old Testament prophets today, we're going to turn to the book of Ezekiel. Anybody ever read Ezekiel? It's a long one. It can get a little bogged down in the middle. Lots of imagery, scary things going on. Ezekiel's a prophet. And I will warn you, we're not taking these messages in order. So hopefully you stay with us from week to week. So 1 week we were before the nation of Judah was taken captive. Pastor Ryan did his message on the peace and prosperity of the city after they were taken captive. And then last week I spoke and we were back to after they had been captive. But now we're going back to the beginning. Now we're going back to the point in time where the people of Judah, the Israelites, are turning their back on God. They're not living right at all. And remember that the purpose that God had for choosing them in that time, in that place, was so that the world would know that he was the one true God. And they weren't doing that at all. In fact, they had given up on following God at all. What they were doing at this point is they were just living like everybody else. They were horrible people. They were diving right headfirst into all the sin of everybody else, and God had no witness at all in that people. And that's where we kind of pick it up today. And I want you to understand the reason we are giving you the history week after week is because this is really the proper way that we should be interpreting the Bible, okay? Sometimes when we like to read the Bible, it's very easy for us to pick out a verse and go, ooh, I like that one. Let's put it on a cross stitch and hang it on the wall, right? I mean, I love that. But that's a terrible way for biblical interpretation because we always have to begin, who wrote it? Who did they write it to? And what was happening at the time that this individual was writing it? And so that's why every week we're giving you the history to help you understand, why is this prophet speaking? And so you'll understand now that the people that the prophet Ezekiel is speaking to, they have turned their back on God completely. And what is happening is Ezekiel is coming to them to say, listen, God is about to remove his protective hand from you. God has protected you from your enemies for ages. But because you have turned your back on God, God is going to remove his protection and he's going to allow you to bear the consequence of your sin. He's going to allow you to just have what you think you want anyway. And what is going to happen is these nations are going to come in and they're going to take you into captivity. And as we know, that ended up happening. But today we're before that. So Ezekiel is hearing from God. He's hearing these words of warning and he's trying to tell the people about the judgment that is to come. And in Ezekiel chapter 22, he lays out a case for why this judgment is going to happen. And it's not great. God was going to remove his hand, and he's going to allow the nation of Babylon to come in, take them captive, and destroy the cities and destroy the temple. Now, we're not going to read the entire chapter, but we are going to read in Ezekiel chapter 22 because I think you'll get a good idea of what was going on here and why Ezekiel's laying out this case for judgment. I'm going to start in verse 25. And it says, there is a conspiracy of her princes within her like a roaring lion tearing its prey. They devour people, take treasures and precious things, and make many widows within her. Her priests do violence to my law and profane my holy things. They do not distinguish between the holy and the common. They teach that there is no difference between the unclean and the clean, and they shut their eyes to the keeping of my Sabbath so that I am profaned among them. Her officials within her are like wolves tearing their prey. They shed blood and kill people to make unjust gain. Her prophets whitewash these deeds for them by false visions, lying divinations. They say, this is what the sovereign Lord says when the Lord has not spoken. The people of the land practice extortion and commit robbery. They oppress the poor and the needy and mistreat the foreigner, denying them justice. Wow! Did you listen to that? Man, the first thing you need to understand is everybody gets called out in this moment. The princes, the priests, the prophets, the people, the city officials, everybody is named here. Everybody is implicated. Everyone is saying, Ezekiel's saying to everyone, you bear responsibility. And the list of things that they are accused of is horrible. Devouring people, stealing, ignoring God, desecrating the religious practices, killing people for gain, false prophecies, extortion, robbery, oppressing the poor, mistreating the foreigner, and denying them justice. And please, please pay attention that when Ezekiel calls them out, there's no weighting of the various things that oppressing the poor and mistreating the foreigner and denying them justice is equally as bad in the eyes of God as killing people for gain. I think we always need to remember that. Okay? So, if we are honest, when we read this passage, just that much right there, I look at that and go, these people get what's coming to them. I mean, they're horrible people. They need to be destroyed. They need to be wiped out. God should do what he's going to do. And so I find myself looking and feeling very unsympathetic to their cause, to their plight. But then we come to verse 30, right after the verse I just read, and listen to what it says. I looked for someone among them who would build up the wall and stand in the gap on behalf of the land so I would not have to destroy it, but I found no one. Now, my kids like to talk about mic drop moments occasionally. This is God's mic drop moment right here. I looked throughout the land for someone, anyone, who would be willing to stand up on behalf of the people, to stand in the gap, and I found who? No one. Isn't that one of the saddest verses you can read in the Bible? You see, in ancient times, to help us kind of understand what Ezekiel's saying here, in ancient times, you know, you had cities. And their protection around the city was a wall. And so when a foreign army would come to invade, that wall was great protection. But what the foreign invading army would try to do would be to get to the wall and punch a hole through the wall, because if they could get a hole in the wall, they could start sending people through that hole and then not just attack from the outside, but also attack from the inside. And once the wall was breached and people could get in, the city would fall. The city could not stand. So once that hole was put in the wall, it was critical for someone to go stand there at the wall, to stand there in protection, to stand in that gap to make sure no one could get in. Now, as you can imagine, this would not be an easy job. This would not be a job that had no risk involved. In fact, it would be a very high-risk job. But it would be someone who cared enough, who loved enough, who was willing enough to go and place themselves there right in front of that hole to prevent anyone from being able to breach the city. And I love the imagery, because what God is saying through Ezekiel here is, in a spiritual aspect, these people have turned their backs on God. They have given up everything that God has told them. They have desecrated the practices that God has laid out for them. And he looks and he says, you know what? I'm looking for someone, anyone, who would be willing to stand up on behalf of the people. And there was no one. God is looking for the same type of people today. People who are willing to stand in the gap for our families, for our coworkers, for our neighborhoods and communities. And the question we come back to today is, what would you do? What will you do? Will God find someone today? I love this imagery. I love this, the language that it's used, because it tells us that God is looking for someone. God is searching for this person. You see, sometimes when we think about religion and we think about how this thing works between us and God, we often phrase it in the aspect that we have to make our way to God, that we have to be good enough and smart enough and believe the right things and do the right things, and therefore we will find ourselves made acceptable to God and we will make our way to him. But that's not the case. Because even here in this moment, we're reminded that God is a passionate, pursuing God, and He is constantly looking for people, people who are willing to care enough about someone else, and who people who are willing to step up and intercede for them. And I think, I say this all the time, and I love it, because and I repeat it because it bears repeating, that the God of the universe, the God who created it all, the God who created it through His spoken word, the eternally existent God chooses to use you and me in His interaction in this world. Now, yes, it would be easier for Him not to. I don't understand why He does, but He wants to use you, and He wants to use me to do this, to intercede. To me, there is something significant here, because the importance there is not just as we intercede for others, it means we're helping them, we're loving them, we're caring for them. But it's a great, incredible reminder that as we are willing to stand in the gap, there's equally something as important happening to us, through us, and within us by the power of God. When we are willing to take our attention off ourselves and focus on other people and say, I'm willing to step up, I'm willing to intercede, it means that God is going to do something not just over there, but He's going to do something through us as well. We get to know and grow and experience God in ways that we can't even imagine when we're willing to stand in the gap. Now, I know, going back to the what would you do analogy, for me, many times I look and I see, and I want to immediately say, not me. God's got to find somebody else. We begin to look for the excuse for why I can't. Well, I'm not a preacher. I'm not a pastor. I'm not a church leader. I'm not a Sunday school teacher. I'm not a small group or D group leader. I'm not this. I'm not that. We constantly look for reasons why it couldn't be us. But when we look at what God was looking for, He says, I'm looking for someone. I don't know about you, but that's not a very high bar. I think I have a higher bar for the men that want to date and marry my daughters one day. I'm not just looking for someone. You're welcome, Liz. She's like, Dad, shut up. Don't say my name. I'm never coming back. No, we have higher standards for our relationships around us. And yet in this moment, God's going, look, I'm not asking the princes and the priests and the prophets and the city officials. I'm looking for someone. I'm looking for anyone. And I think all of us would look and you would say, well, I think I can do that. I could stand in the gap. I could intercede. But the question is, will we? Because it challenges us at our very core. Will we? Because to stand in the gap for someone else means we self-sacrifice in order for someone else to gain. We are willing to love someone enough to put them ahead of ourselves. And we move our focus from us to them, from our own little universe to their needs and their concerns. You see, standing in the gap is a willingness to sacrifice ourselves for someone else. And we need to ask ourselves, are we truly willing to do that? Do we really care enough? Do we really love enough to be willing to do that? You see, and what we're really talking about when we talk about interceding is a beautiful picture that's laid out for us. Because in the Bible, the one that was interceding most of the time when things were going well for the people was the priest. And what this image tells us is that we are being called upon, all of us, not just me because I stand here and work here, but all of us are being called upon to be priests, people that will stand in the gap to intercede for other people. To be a priest, you are called to be a priest, even if people don't realize or want you to be their priest. We can still intercede and stand in the gap for them. There's an author I love to read. His name is Richard Foster, and he writes this. He says, as priests appointed and anointed by God, we have the honor of going before the Most High on behalf of others. This is not optional. It is a sacred obligation and a precious privilege. He goes on to say, if we truly love people, we will desire for them far more than it is within our power to give them, and that will lead us to intercede. That will lead us to stand in the gap for them. When we love and we care that much, we realize that our intercession for them moves beyond just a, oh God, bless Garrett, I hope he has a good day. It drives us to our knees to cry out and bang on the throne of heaven for that person. It also goes further because it means instead of just passing by people casually, nonchalantly, it means we need to learn to stop. We need to learn to engage. We need to learn to observe. We need to learn to listen. You can't intercede for someone if you don't know them, if you don't understand what they're going through. And we sometimes in our culture are so much in a hurry and so busy and so preoccupied and so self-focused that we don't take the time to truly listen and hear when people are telling us what's going on in their lives. But standing in the gap means we stop. Have you ever just in a conversation really looked at somebody? Let me challenge you to do that. Just really, it may freak them out a little bit because we don't do that very often. But to actually look them in the eye. And then instead of thinking about the 15 things you've got to do and the place you've got to get to next, you stop and you really engage in what they're telling you. And then you respond, not to fix them, but maybe to clarify, maybe to let them know that you've been listening, to understand where they are and what they've been going through. Because we know you got stuff, I got stuff, all God's children got stuff. And if we don't take the time to stop and listen, if we just keep doing this around each other, what are we missing by not truly standing in the gap for one another here, for not standing in the gap for those coworkers that may be going through incredibly traumatic things that they just don't feel like they can share right then with people that just don't even look at them when they talk. We are called to intercede, to stand in the gap. Observe, pay attention, listen, hear, and care. Actually care. You know, I think sometimes when we think about this idea of interceding for people, standing in the gap, I think there's things behind us, presuppositions, that kind of drive us to inactivity. You know, Ezekiel is a tough book to read. I mean, maybe you saw it in the verses we read. If you continue reading past where we stop, it says, "So I will pour out my wrath on them and consume them with my fiery anger, bringing down on their heads all they have done," says the Lord. Wow, we don't like that, do we? We like lovey Jesus, but sometimes we need to understand that there's a judgment. We don't like that word. But do you realize if we never intercede for people, it's really making a statement that we don't believe that judgment is real? If we don't take the time to really get to know people, to understand, to share with them how Jesus has transformed our life, there could be the belief behind us that says, do we really believe that at all? Interceding can be done just by simply praying for people, but if we don't believe that prayer actually does anything, then we really don't find ourselves interceding very much, do we? You see, what we believe about God, about judgment, about Jesus, about love, will drive whether or not we're actually truly willing to step forward and stand in the gap for someone else. That's important for us to realize. Because if we believe that Jesus changes everything, if we have experienced the freedom from guilt and shame, if we have experienced freedom from the power of sin, if we have experienced the joy and the peace and the love that nothing in this world can match or comprehend, then there won't be anything that could possibly stop us from standing in the gap for those around us. There's nothing that could prevent us from doing that. From a practical standpoint, what does it mean to stand in the gap? It can be as simple as prayer, as I said, but it can be so much more than that. It can be being a witness. It can be a listening ear. It can be a voice for the voiceless. It can be being a father to the fatherless. It can be living generously. It can be all these things. It can be stepping into a place where you see a need and doing something about it and crying out to God on somebody else's behalf. What I love about this picture of standing in the gap isn't just the imagery of the wall, which I think is very powerful, but this idea of intercession, this idea of standing in the gap, it runs throughout the narrative of Scripture. It runs from the book of Genesis all the way to the end. Do you realize that? Early in the book of Genesis, we find Abraham, and Abraham is told that there's a city that's going to be destroyed. And Abraham himself steps up and he says, "Hold on, God. What about if we can find some righteous people in that city? Would you be willing to spare it?" And God says, "Yes." What is Abraham doing in that moment? He's stepping in the gap. He's standing there interceding for that city. A little later in Exodus chapter 32, Moses is up on top of the mountain receiving the Ten Commandments. And the people of Israel down there, the Jewish people, they've gone nuts. They're building golden calves, worshiping idols, things like that. And God is ticked off. God is angry. They've seen his power. He's chosen them. He's called them out. And he's like, "Moses, that's it. I'm going to wipe them out." And you know what Moses does? Not what Brent would have done. Brent would have said, "You're right, do it. They're idiots. Take them out. Let's start over." Moses doesn't do that. Moses steps in and he says, "Don't do that, God. Don't do that." What would others look and say? What would the Egyptians say, that you just brought them out here to kill them? Moses stands in the gap for a bunch of idiots. People who had turned their back on God. And let that be something that tells us that we may be called to stand in the gap for idiots. People we look at, people we think, "You get what you deserve," and yet that's not what we see happening, because even then, the greatest example of intercession, the greatest example of somebody standing in the gap, is Jesus Christ nailed to a cross between earth and heaven, interceding for us, knowing there was no way in our sin that there was ever anything we could do to get right with God. And he said, "They're a bunch of idiots, but God, I love them. I love them. I'm going to lay down my life for them." You know what's amazing about this picture is it wasn't just that Jesus on the cross interceded, that when you go and you read in the book of Hebrews in the New Testament, it says that Jesus is even interceding for us today, right now, in this moment. He continues to intercede for you. And that needs to be our motivation. And we look at people and we say they may not deserve it. That's right. We didn't deserve it either. We look at others and we say, "Is it really worth our time?" Well, were we really worth Jesus's time? And he looks at us and he says, "You were absolutely worth everything I gave for you, up to and including my entire life on the cross. And if Jesus was willing to lay down his life for us, how much more should we be willing to stand in the gap for those people around us? How much more willing should we be willing to step up and be that voice for the voiceless, that father for the fatherless, living generously, doing all those things because people need it, not because they deserve it. We didn't deserve it, but because they need it. And we look and we see people at the point of their need and we step into that gap for them. Remember, the point of this series is called Imagine, from what is to what could be. Think for just a moment how different our community could be if everyone in this room made the conscious decision today to say, "You know what, I'm going to find one person, one family, one coworker, one neighbor, one whatever, and I am going to stand in the gap for them this week." And you may be thinking, "Well, what does that look like?" I don't know. But you know, it begins with this. It begins with that picture of that person. And then it begins with a prayer that says, "God, show me how to stand in the gap for that person." Because I'm just going to tell you, I believe that you are a priest. I believe that the Holy Spirit of God dwells within you. And when you begin to reach out and to seek out and you pray a prayer like that, that God will speak to you. You will hear his voice and you will know what standing in the gap looks like for that individual. The real question is back to the beginning. What would you do? What would you do? You see, I think there are three options for us. We can stand idly by and just watch it happen. We can actually stand in the way and try to prevent others from standing in the gap. Or we can stand in the gap.